And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, April 21st, 2016. JMEC meets to try to resolve the impasse over Riek Machar's return to Juba.
I'm announcing to the press here, once we have this approval of the government to bring in 20 RPG and 20 PKM, then we shall have the first vice president in Juba as early as possible.
And things are not getting any better for journalists trying to do their job in South Sudan.
Journalists in this country have been having it very rough in the last few months. In the past, they used to arrest journalists, that's okay, but not torture them. But now we see them being tortured, kidnapped and tortured by unknown people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese gender activist says the country's leaders must recognize the important role women have played during the 2 years of fighting. Census Kabang Lo Lingyong says participation of women is important for the development of South Sudan. Kabang says the government should invest in women to bring change in the country.
Societies believe they need to live within a male leadership role model, and as such, they have grown through that, whether it's in their communities or in their villages. They easily move on to emulate that in the government because it is a system that they are used to. When you try and bring something different, it takes time. It's not easy. It takes time to start making sure more women exist in parliament, more women are put as ministers. It takes time to start changing that model. It requires to change the type of thought and ideas that most of these men have in the system, for them to start seeing women, understanding that there is something they bring into the system, something they bring that's different. We believe that it's important to have capable women, not just any woman.
Can you define what a capable woman is? How does she look like?
Basically, what I am saying is what we need is to have qualified individuals. They also have the experience within that, and they are ready to take on leadership roles. I think that's what's important. In taking over leadership roles, you might find in certain areas a woman is more stronger than a man.
But you're talking about qualified women in a society where education is given to the boys. The priority is boys. And they say the woman belongs at home, in the kitchen, and will be married off.
I would first say it comes from priorities of families. I have been grateful to come from one where girls' education was put as a priority, and as such, they made sure we were in school, because men are able to fend for themselves from all different ways. They don't necessarily need the specific school education to do that. But for a woman, that becomes a tool that keeps her away from certain activities. It becomes a tool that helps her lead in society. It becomes a tool that helps her become the change she can be, a better change maker in society.
And what is your experience in South Sudan? You were educated, you were operating in a community where they don't expect women to be leaders. What is your experience like? Do people close doors on your face?
I have been privileged to meet those who understand that women bring a difference, educated women bring a difference into society, and they want to see that and they support it. You find that those who find difficulties accepting women in such positions where they are outspoken or they are educated, able to articulate their issues, most of the time these are people who maybe grew up amongst having only men in their family do certain things. And so to them, it's different to see that. And sometimes people don't know how to accept what is different or how to deal with what is different.
And what gives you the energy to move, so to speak, in a situation where you could be one woman among 100 men in a discussion? What gives you the energy to stand up and speak?
I wish you would be around for some of our development policy forums to see how we articulate and debate issues. Yes, there are more men and there are also women. But I believe for a lot of us, our strength comes from the fact that we are change makers. A woman is a change maker. A woman is a peace weaver. A woman is able to sustain livelihoods for her family. As such, it's important for us to speak. It's important for us to debate. It's important for us to work hard on areas that we are specialized in. It's important for us to push for girls' education in the country.
That is Senses Kabang Loliong, a member of the Ebony Center's Policy Development Forum. She was speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Juba today. The government and the SPLM-IO still continue to trade blame each other for the failure of Riek Machar's return to Juba. A meeting of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Meeting today failed to break the impasse over the first vice president designate's return. The two parties continue to disagree over security matters regarding Riek Machar's return to the capital. SPLM-IO officials insist that Machar be allowed to come on a chartered plane with more than 30 rocket-propelled grenades and at least 30 automatic weapons. Juba says it would only accept far less than that. Partners to the peace agreement yesterday proposed that Machar's forces come with 20 PKM and 20 rocket-propelled grenades. Today, extraordinary five-hour meeting of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission aimed at reaching an understanding failed to make any breakthroughs. Taban Dangai is the chief negotiator for the SPLM-IO.
We are allowed now, by that proposal, to bring only 20 RPG and 20 PKM. But the government is still to give their approval to that proposal of the partners. I'm announcing to the press here, once we have this approval of the government to bring in 20 RPG and 20 PKM, then we shall have the first vice president in Juba as early as possible.
Government spokesman Michael McQuay encouraged the SPLM-IO to think about the compromise offer.
The government and the SPLM-IO are advised to go and sleep over this, think of how best we can come up with an amicable solution that will address the issue.
JMEC Chair Festus Mahai says talks over the issue are still ongoing and says JMEC will continue to mediate over the issue. Mahai says there should be no any breakthrough on the issue. He will then be reporting to IGAD, the African Union Security Council, and the United Nations Security Council to make recommendations. Machar was first expected to arrive last week, then again on Monday and Tuesday. It's not clear when he will return to the capital. Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report in Juba. A local group in Wau County is helping women traumatized by war. The Women Development Group organized a one-day workshop to train hundreds of women leaders in counseling skills. The women are expected to help other women affected by the conflict and how they cope with grief and other psychological problems. Dimo Silva Aurelo has this report for VOA from Wau.
The women being trained in counseling skills are drawn from villages of Hingisa, Brinji and Farjela. Most of them had women farming groups in their villages. Some women say they have lost loved ones since fighting broke out between government troops and anti-government groups in Wau County more than 3 months ago. They say fighters on both sides of the conflict have looted property and burned farm products, including food. Asunta Marco Ukola fled the violence in Hingisa. Speaking in Arabic, Ukola says she lost everything during the fighting and needs help coping with her loss and adjusting to her new life in Wau.
All my houses were burned and nothing was left. I came here and got the Women Developing Group who is giving us this workshop. In Wau here, there is no water. Getting firewood and food is difficult. This is giving us a lot of stress. But thank God this group is helping us with some money to start a living in the town, though it's not enough.
Ukola says during the one-day psychological first aid training workshop, she learned how to manage stress. For instance, she says, talking to people and sharing problems with a friend can help one overcome stress. Another workshop participant, Umjima Peter, says having lived all her life in a small village, she feels overwhelmed because she does not know how to earn a living in a town like Wau. Speaking in Arabic, Peter says she often worries about how to find firewood and vegetables. which she used to obtain free of charge in her village.
We are affected as well as our children because we don't allow our children to go to school for fear that anything can happen and they can go missing. Also, getting them paid at school is expensive.
WAXO facilitator Sidonia Paul says it is important that women leaders deal with their trauma and psychosocial problems ahead of the farming season so they can encourage their colleagues to go out and farm.
Here in South Sudan, we face many problems and we need healing. And as a leader, you have to heal yourself so that you can heal others. That is why we put this psychosocial training within this training of leadership.
Anthony Albino, a project officer at Women Development Group, says his organization is suspending its support to women farming groups in Wau County because it believes that women want to be able to farm, decision given the suffering they have undergone during the 3.5 months of conflict.
We think that there will be need for them to help them with the psychosocial support plus leadership. This is the actually training for them, but we add also psychosocial support so that they can feel like the war is not there, or to leave your place is not the hand of the world.
Albino says some of the women who have not received counseling have resorted to unhealthy ways to deal with their stress, such as drinking alcohol or smoking. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
Authorities at South Sudan's University of Bahr el Ghazal have decided to allow students to form a students' union, something the students have been demanding for the past decade. Authorities gave the go-ahead for creating a union after students threatened to disrupt examinations if the university refuses to grant what they say is their legal right. Once more, we have Dimo Silva Aurelio reporting from Wau.
Chanting in Arabic, "A students' union is our right," students at the University of Bahr el Ghazal demanded the right to form a students' union yesterday. Several students held banners reading, "No union, no lectures," and "A students' union is our legal demand," as they awaited the university administration's decision. Minutes later, University of Bahr el Ghazal Vice Chancellor Samson Samuel Wasara emerged from the meeting to address the students.
On behalf of the University of Bahr el Ghazal administration, I do here declare the formative processes of the student union under the guidance of the Dean of Students and later on by the Board of Dean of Student Affairs.
Students cheered upon hearing the news. Although students got what they wanted, Wasara says it was wrong for them to threaten to disrupt examinations. And Wasara warns that other university organizations will remain the overall policy makers at the university.
Note that the law of the University Act has supremacy over all statutes, constitutions of other structures in the university.
Students say they think the students' union will help address their legitimate concerns and minimize tensions between students and the university administration. Pony Catherine Gabriel, a fourth-year student in the College of Education, says she is proud to be among the students pioneering the formation of a students' union.
I'm a bit happy because it's a long-awaiting day. Though it's not going to benefit me as a fourth-year student, but people who will join the university and those ones who are currently in first year and second year, I think they deserve the union because there are many other issues that are supposed to be addressed by the union.
Paulino Arol Anyon, a first-year economic student, says the students' union will not only help narrow the gap between students and the university administration, but will provide an important link of communication between students and the administration.
Today, we are celebrating the happiness made by our vice chancellor for launching the Union of the Students of Bahr el Ghazal. It is for the first time since the University of Bahr el Ghazal established, there was no legal procedures made to govern the student union institute has in university without using the violence.
Bahr el Ghazal University was established in 1991 as one of the 5 public universities in South Sudan. Since that time, it had not allowed students to form a union. The University of Juba is the only public university in South Sudan that has a students' union, although the administration has since suspended its activities. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What are Ethiopian authorities doing to track down the suspected South Sudanese killers in the Gambela attack? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should energy supplies be sold through private companies or managed by government? Why?
Energy supplies should be managed by the government, because when someone sells it privately, you'll be selling it at a high price.
I think private companies should manage energy supply because that will ensure efficiency.
If it is managed by the government, there's a tendency of having to pay low rates when it comes to bill. But then if it is managed by private institutions, people will pay more.
Private companies should manage energy supplies for efficiency.
Energy supply is very important for us, so it can be managed by government, but it will be better if it's to be managed by private sector, because sometimes government don't have these facilities.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Live from Washington, I'm Ayan Bior, and this is South Sudan in Focus. The Ethiopian military today says they have located the estimated 100 children kidnapped last week from Ethiopia. Ethiopian news agencies report that troops have crossed the border into South Sudan and have surrounded an unidentified town where they believe the children are being held. Getachew Reda, the Minister of Communications for Ethiopia, confirms that the country's military has been conducting a three-day reconnaissance mission in an unspecified part of South Sudan, and they have located the children and are ready to take action against the gunmen.
That's going to be a very limited operation in that sense, because we're not interested in any permanent presence in that part of the world, because the South Sudan's government, as a sovereign government, has every right to protect its own territory. But this time around, they realize, they understand the seriousness of the concern, and of course, they are more than willing to cooperate in our efforts to neutralize the threat, because ultimately, this is going to be a joint responsibility of both the Sudan government and the government of Ethiopia.
Officials in Addis Ababa say the gunmen who shot and killed more than 200 residents of the Ethiopian town of Jakawa last Friday also abducted more than 100 children. Ethiopian officials say they also stole about 1,000 heads of cattle in the raid. Reda says the Ethiopian troops are also working to rescue the stolen cattle. South Sudan has fallen 15 rankings in the 2016 World Press Freedom Index. The media watchdog says press freedoms in South Sudan have deteriorated because of the more than two-year-long conflict. It says the South Sudan government restricts media outlets from reporting on conflict-related issues. The government denies it has clamped down on media reform, on media freedoms. Maguma Davis-Wakarind reports for VOA from Juba.
The 2016 World Press Freedom Index report released yesterday says there has been a deep and disturbing decline in media freedoms at both the global and regional levels. It says things are particularly bad in South Sudan. Alfred Taban, head of Association for Media Development in South Sudan, says he's not surprised by the findings of this report.
Journalists in this country have been having it very rough in the last few months. I mean, things that used not to happen to them, things like kidnapping and torture. In the past, they used to arrest journalists, that's okay, but not torture them. But now we see them being tortured, kidnapped and tortured by unknown people. This is a very serious development. And so it is true that definitely the situation of journalists has worsened in South Sudan.
He says at least three journalists have been detained or arrested without charges since the start of this year. 24-year-old, Juba-based reporter Kidega Livingstone works for the Juba Monitor. He says in January he was detained by unidentified people for hours before doing his work.
When I was doing my story some villages around Juba town, I was doing my story about sanitation. So some other people came and harassed me, then they took me to the authority. Then from there, it's the authority who released me.
Livingstone says he now fears to gather information from the public and says he plans to quit journalism and look for any other profession that does not put his life in danger. Michael Makwey, South Sudan's information minister, denies the government restricts journalists from doing their job.
I don't agree with their rating because South Sudan is one of the countries in which there is absolute freedom of expression and freedom of media. They have even been writing against the heads of the head of the state and everywhere, all the dignitaries, and nobody is being touched.
Just last week, Makwey threatened the government would shut down radio stations that continue to air live phone-in programs that discuss political issues. Today, Makwey insists this is not a violation of media rights.
We don't allow live calls because it is in the, when you give chance to live calls, people express, people tend to talk on heated issues, heated speech. People tend to agitate. People tend to act against the law. This is why I said we don't support, we are not for this direct telephone calls.
Makwey also says the government has enacted media bills that allow journalists access to information. Critics say those laws are not enforced. Taban says the government must ensure that it investigates and punishes those who torture journalists. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Wrestling in South Sudan is not only a sport, it's a way to unite communities. Jason Patinkin has more from Juba.
With chests bare and leopard skins tied around their waists, 30 South Sudanese wrestlers marched into Juba Stadium. Traditional wrestling is hugely popular here. Four teams from different tribes will compete in the tournament to bring home prizes of cattle and national bragging rights. The tournament is also about showing that different South Sudanese tribes can bring peace after more than 2 years of war divided the country along ethnic lines. Peter Biarajak, CEO of South Sudan Wrestling Entertainment, which organized the event, said South Sudan's leaders have been too slow to end the civil war. He says it is time ordinary folks did so themselves through sport.
So we felt the people of South Sudan need peace, and we start mobilizing as young people from different tribes, that we are going to host a wrestling tournament as a way, of, as our own way of bringing peace to South Sudan, a peace at grassroots level.
Ajak says the last wrestling tournament in Juba began on December 14th, 2013, one day before war broke out.
But it was very sad that people came to Juba to promote peace, to promote their culture, to promote peaceful coexistence, and then they were interrupted by conflict. So this morning I was very excited when we managed to go ahead with to start the tournament and to start the match, and I'm glad that this match has happened successfully and peacefully.
In Saturday's match, the Bor Dinka tribe defeated the Mundari after 15 rounds. The two tribes have a history of deadly conflict over pasture and cattle. Bor Dinka coach Chol Jock said bringing young men of the two tribes together to wrestle can prevent violence.
When you are wrestling with somebody, and then you go and dance with him, eat with him, this one will be your friend. And then you sit together and then you play everything with him. And then there's no fighting again.
Bor Dinka wrestler Maniak Mapel Lual said he felt happy to wrestle after so long.
You know, seeing the war break out in 2013, we are facing difficulties. And when we come to an end, we shall be happy. So we want to show to the people that we accepted the feast.
The tournament will last 1 week. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Juba.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. The government and the SPLM-IO still continue to blame each other for the failure of Riek Machar to return to Juba. A meeting of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation meeting today failed to break the impasse over the first vice president designate's return. SPLM-IO officials in Juba insist that Machar be allowed to come on a charter plane with more than 30 rocket-propelled grenades and at least 30 automatic weapons. Juba says it would only accept far less than that. Partners to the peace agreement yesterday proposed that Machar's forces come with about 20 machine guns and rocket-propelled grenades. Today's five-hour emergency JMEC meeting, aimed at reaching a compromise, failed to make any breakthroughs. Tabang Den Gai, the chief negotiator for the SPLM-IO in the capital, says they have been given permission to bring a certain amount of weapons into Juba, and they will discuss that offer with Mr. Machar. Government spokesman Michael McQuay encouraged the SPLM to do just that. JMEC chairman Festus Muhai says talks over the issue are still ongoing, and JMEC will continue to mediate over the issue. South Sudan has fallen 15 rankings in the 2016 World Press Freedom Index. The media watchdog says press freedoms in South Sudan have deteriorated rapidly because of the more than two-year-long conflict. It says the South Sudan government restricts media outlets from reporting on conflict-related issues. The government denies it has clamped down on media freedoms. The 2016 World Press Freedom Index was released yesterday. It says there has been a deep and disturbing decline in media freedoms at both the global and regional levels, and things are particularly bad in South Sudan. Alfred Taban, head of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, says he is not surprised by the findings. He says journalists in South Sudan have been having it very rough for the past few months. They have been tortured and kidnapped, he says, when before they were merely questioned for hours, then released. He says at least three journalists have been detained or arrested without charge since the beginning of this year. 24-year-old Juba-based reporter Kadega Livingstone works for the Juba Monitor newspaper. He says in January he was detained by unidentified people for hours while doing his work. Livingstone says when he was doing a story in some villages around Juba town, he was talking about sanitation with citizens. People came, they came, he said, and harassed him and took him to the authorities. Livingstone says he now fears to gather information from the public and says he plans to quit journalism and look for another profession that does not put his life in danger. And finally, the Ethiopian military today says they have located the estimated 100 children kidnapped last week from Ethiopia. Ethiopian news agencies report that troops have crossed the border into South Sudan and have surrounded an unidentified town where they believe the children are being held. Getachew Reda, the Minister of Communications for Ethiopia, confirms that the country's military has been conducting a three-day reconnaissance mission in an unspecified part of South Sudan and that they have located the children and are ready to take action against the gunmen. Officials in Addis Ababa say the gunman who shot and killed more than 200 residents of the Ethiopian town last Friday also abducted more than 100 children. Officials say they also stole about 1,000 head of cattle in the raid. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Season of Peace by W.J.
Now and forever. Summer, is that good?
We've been listening to WJ with the song Season of Peace. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.